So I want to start off my message today with a little video clip. And this is a video clip from the Harry Potter movie. And I know it's not always an okay thing in church. I just want to clarify, there will be no showing of magic or sorcery or witchcraft in this video clip. It's a very quick clip of Harry's life before he goes to Hogwarts, for those of you who know the story. So this is before it. Am I Generation Y? Possibly. Gen Y or Gen Next, one of the two. I don't know. Sorry, got a question. Gen Y. Probably Gen Y. So this is a quick video clip showing sort of this lifestyle. And the reason I'm showing this, it does have a reason. I'm showing this because I want you guys to be thinking about it as you're watching it, how we view teens in our culture, as adults especially. So if you're an adult in here right now, this is really for you. How we view teens. I want you to sort of watch this. I think this is a great depiction of how we view teens, if you want to throw that up there for me.
Up. Get up. Now.
Birthday, son.
Why don't you just cook the breakfast and try not to burn anything?
Yes, Aunt Petunia.
I want everything to be perfect for my Dudley's special day.
Hurry up. Bring my coffee, boy.
Yes, Uncle Vernon.
Aren't they wonderful, darling?
How many are there?
36. Counted them myself.
Yes, well, some of them are quite a bit bigger than last year.
I don't care how big they are!
No. This is what we're going to do. Is that when we go out, we're going to buy you two new presents. How's that, pumpkin?
I'm warning you now, boy. Any funny business, any at all, and you won't have any meals for a week. Giddy.
So I was thinking about talking about teens today, and I thought sometimes we just kind of want to shove them under a cupboard in a closet, under the stairs, make them do the chores. If they do anything funny, they don't get to eat for a week. I thought this really was applicable to the way we often view teens, especially teens today, who are being parented by the previous generation, tends to be this way. At least in my growing up, my dad wished we were all just seen and not heard. We definitely had that. I definitely had my dad yell at me to do chores all the time, tell me not to burn food. And maybe that's just unique to my family. But sometimes I think we view teens in this way, where we kind of want them to, you know, when they become teens, they're weird. Something strange happens to teenagers. They go into this really, like this vortex of I don't want to be anywhere near them because they're teenagers. And when they come out of that around 18 years old and they become adults, okay, now we can hang out with them again. They're kind of untouchable for a few years. And we just want to shove them under a cupboard under the stairs. And I think that a lot of that comes from a fear of teenagers. They start to develop independence in this stage and we get kind of scared of it. And until they're adults and they can be maturely independent, we don't want to be involved with them. So we're going to talk a little bit today, and part of my goal is to try to just sort of reveal the mystery of teenagers a little bit. I mean, as I said last week, you try to define a teenager, it's like nailing water to a wall. But we're going to try to sort of reveal some of the mystery of it. You don't have to be scared of teenagers. They really just want us to be engaging with them and treat them like equals. And so we're going to try to understand a little bit about teenagers today. And we're also going to talk a whole bunch about how we can get involved in helping them develop. Because it doesn't work for us just to ignore them. It's interesting, I saw this clip. We treat teenagers like this, but here's the result. And this is a post on Facebook from Will Smith. I don't know if you can read it, but I'm going to read it to you. Will Smith posted this on Facebook. It's gone viral. He posted it ages ago. But this is what it says. It's a little rhyme because, you know, Will Smith's a rapper. This is what he says. This is the result of us shoving people under the cupboard, like Harry Potter, right? We just shove them under the cupboard. This is the result. This is what we've got now. Grades are getting low. The teens are getting high. That 12-year-old is pregnant and her parents wonder why. A first grader is swearing. A third grader has been raped. Just take a look around you. Isn't the system great? Who isn't faded these days? Teens are sending nudes. Kids are getting beaten. The teachers see the bruises. No calls for help are spoken. Teens are smoking weed. Young girls are cutting. This isn't what we need. The marks of taunt and yelling. Parents are divorced. That 14-year-old is drinking beer. This can't get any worse. A little girl has killed herself. Nobody seems to care. Another kid has been expelled for a stupid dare. But it needs to change. Our world is officially broken. It's time to take a stand. Your thoughts need to be spoken. And he's not wrong. For years, teenagers and young people were to be seen and not heard, shoved under the stairs and ignored. Wait until they got more mature before they could have real responsibility or really be engaged with. They wouldn't understand it anyways because they're stupid when they're teenagers. And this is the result. They feel separated, they feel alienated, and they turn to other options. And I think Will Smith pretty much nails it with where our culture's at in a lot of ways. And maybe for out here to make it more applicable, I could have added a line in about Bush parties and stuff, because I think that happens out here a bit. That may be more relevant to this area. There's a real problem in our world and in the way that we have our youth culture right now. And it's becoming more and more acceptable and normal to live this way. Amongst teenagers especially. This is more and more common. Weed is healthy. It's good for you. In fact, it might even be legalized. It's not, but anyways. It's never good to put something in your lungs that's not air. But that's what our culture is saying. If you haven't... One of the worst lines I ever heard, but I hear this all the time when I was in high school myself. How can you get married before ever having sex? You don't buy a car without test driving it first, right? That's what our culture says. That's what these teenagers are believing. And unless we do something about it, it's just going to keep going that way, and it could get worse. He says it can't get any worse in his little rhyme. It could get worse. So the question then is, who does the responsibility fall to? And what do we do about it? How do we get involved and how do we do something with this injustice, with this craziness that's going on? So I would suggest that there are... Not working? There, ha! There are three places where the responsibility falls to. First and foremost is the family. Secondly is the community. And thirdly is the church. I forgot to turn my volume down on my phone. Oh, and that guy's not even in the church. That's just a random friend. Yeah, I have friends. There, now my phone is turned down. Oh, okay, that's cool. Yeah, Pokemon text. I get those sometimes too. Anyways, so I think this responsibility to do something about this culture falls to three places: the family, the community, and the church. But before we can jump into this, I really wanted to quickly clarify for everybody what an adolescent or a teenager is. So, of course, the word teenager refers to someone who's a teenager, someone in their teens, right? So 13 to 18, or 13 to 19, sorry. Well, just skip a year there. They don't matter. But we actually have a wider spread than that. We call it adolescence. So adolescence is that middle process from when you're not a child and you're not an adult and you're developing into an adult. So they call it an adolescent. Adolescence has always started, we've always determined adolescence as starting at puberty. So it's a little different for everyone, but the average age of puberty right now is 10 years old. So in general, on average, puberty starts at 10, which means that adolescence, on average, starts at 10. However, there are kids, girls are you know, easier to report on this kind of thing, but there are kids who are reported to have been reaching puberty by the age of 8. So it can be happening quite young today. Whereas 100 years ago, 14 was the average age. So it's quite interesting. Anyways, so adolescence starts at puberty, roughly 10 years old, and it continues for quite a while. But the question is, when does it end? And then this is where it gets a little bit fuzzy, because there's a fuzzy place where it ends. The law, Canadian law, says that you're not an adolescent after 18. You're now an adult when you're 18 years old. Historically, adolescence ends with marriage. So you're not an adult until you're married. However, psychologists, and I study a lot of this kind of stuff and read a lot of this stuff because I think sometimes it matters when I'm doing youth work. Psychologists suggest, and this is actually a very old theory, this is way back almost 100 years old or more, that they go through a phase, that young people go through a phase where they must determine three things. And we actually went through these three things last week. They have to go through determining identity, autonomy, and affinity. And they are not an adult, or they don't finish the process of adolescence until all three of these things have been established in their life. So just a quick refresher on that. An autonomy is, how am I different and how am I unique? Young people have to find the answer to that question before they can proceed. They have to know, how am I different, how am I unique, and as a result of being unique, how am I useful? And then affinity is the opposite of that. Where do I fit in? And a young person has to have both. They need both. How am I unique and useful? And yet, how do I fit in still? I need to do both. And from these two sort of contrasting tensions, they develop, who am I? Identity. Who am I? So adolescence starts at the age of 10, but can go, psychologists say, until late 20s before they have developed their identity. The average age of adolescence right now, according to these studies, is 10 years old to the late 20s. I see some young adults nodding. Yes, that's me. No, just kidding. I would still fit into that category, although I think I've figured out who I am. Maybe. I'll go by the one before that. I was married earlier, so I'm married. I'm an adult now. It works. So our adolescent range is quite large. What we're going to try to focus on mostly today, though, is focusing on the teenagers that are still, by law, not adults. So we're going to look at the law setting today. So we're looking at age 10 to 18 as sort of that category of youth that we hit, though this would apply in a wider basis, I hope. Hopefully. All right, let's look at the family. So sometimes it works. There we go. So we're going to open up our Bibles, because I think as we look at this kind of stuff, we need to be informed by what's important to us, and that's our scripture. And my Bible's kind of too big for this. That's notes from youth group. So we are in this passage that I think applies to family involvement is actually in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 6. And it says this, these are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live, by keeping all these decrees and commands, and so that you may enjoy long life. Hear, O Israel, and be careful to obey, that it may go well with you, and that you may increase greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give to you, that I give you today, are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands. Bind them on your foreheads. Write them on your door frames of your houses and on your gates. The laws of the Lord are to be something that we teach in the household, that we are to have at home, that is a family affair. It's a family ordeal. It's not meant to just be for the church to teach you, but it's got to be in the household. One of the major issues... Sorry. I saw like five people yawn all at the same time. That was cool. Wow. Somehow I keep them entertained on a youth night, but Sunday morning, it's just, can't do it. Need more coffee. So, distract myself. It's that little bit of nervousness. Thanks for being patient. Good church. So raising kids and teaching of the Bible and teaching God's law and teaching the truth of Scripture is not just the role of the church. It is the role of the family. It must be done at home. I think this is something that Chris has been pushing for several months in this series. It needs to start at home. I'm a youth pastor. I teach your kids about the Bible. I see them for 2 hours, 2.5 maybe, a week on a Friday night. I try to make it more than that. But really, 2.5 hours a week on Friday night. We spend 20 minutes doing a sermon that I preach at them. Kind of preach at them. We laugh more than we talk, maybe. But I spend 20 minutes telling them about God's word, telling them the story of Jesus. And then they go into small groups where their small group leaders spend about 40 minutes getting to tell them a little bit more. But really, it focuses on their life. That is maybe an hour that we at this church work on teaching your kids about the Bible. That's not enough. It's got to be at home, because they're at home more than they're here. It's got to be at home. It is our responsibility as parents to educate our children and to educate our teenagers. They will respect you for it, though they'll laugh at you at first, especially if it's like awkward and kind of weird. But they'll laugh. It's all good. Just go with it. Laugh. But here's the most important thing, and this, I hope I'm not overstepping my bounds here, because I am only currently have 3-year-olds, and communication doesn't exist with 3-year-olds. It's like, Lucy, we need to get you dressed. She's like, no. You're like, Lucy, ba 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 ba. That's not words. Okay, we don't really have, communication doesn't really exist with a 3-year-old yet, kind of, except that she knows how to say no, and that's good for her. But communication, especially with teens, really, really, really matters. So I hope I'm not overstepping myself here. Feel free to, again, yell at me if I'm wrong, or throw a text at me, or if you have a thought on this, to add to it, feel free to text me on that. There was a text about the generational thing. I might come back to that at the end. Communication really, really matters. And I want to talk a little bit about how the communication thing works. There's this really great book. I lent it to somebody and I haven't received it back. And I think that was in Vancouver, so may not ever get it back. But if you get the chance to find this book, or if we can find it for the church library, I recommend getting it out. It's not there right now, but we'll see if we can find it one day. It's called How to Talk So Teens Will Listen and Listen So Teens Will Talk. It is an awesome book. It is a great resource book. It's really well written. Highly recommend it. Here's some of the principles out of it. Communication is so important with teens, and yet we often fail to communicate with teens, especially as parents. Not to say that I'm a parent of teens, but if you're a parent of teens, I'm sure you've had trouble communicating with your teenager. Pretty fair bet. I'm pretty sure. There's probably been at least one screaming match a month, possibly a week, maybe each day. Depends on the teen, depends on the parent. All right. So I'm going to try to give you pointers for communication. It's like nailing water to a wall. I just want to say that before I get into this. It's like nailing water to a wall. Not going to work. But we're going to try. So these are some pointers in communication that I think are helpful and that are sort of basic principles out of this book, How to Talk So Teens Will Listen and Listen So Teens Will Talk. So youth communicate by story and they understand truth through experience. It will not work for you to try to reason with a teenager these days most of the time. But you say, when I was a kid, this is how it happened. Oh, you have a choice here, son. Let me tell you the choice I made when I was a child. You tell them a story. Better chance that they're going to get something out of your story than they will if you say, well, if you do that, you're going to get hurt. They're going to be like, I don't get hurt. I am young and agile, and I'm invincible. I can't get hurt because I'm a teenager. That's how I think. Right? But you say, when I was a kid, I did that exact same thing. Let me tell you a story about this one time when I broke my arm. The kid's like, wow, maybe I shouldn't do this. I could get hurt. Yeah, that's what I said. Story. It helps. And sometimes the experience is all they really have to go through, and yeah, good luck with the story thing. Anyways, second thing is youth need to feel heard. So you tell a youth, you're going to get hurt. The kid says, I'm not going to get hurt. Sometimes he just needs you to hear that. No, he really thinks he's going to be okay. He's fairly athletic. He thinks he's young. That's all right. He needs to feel heard and validated. What we often forget to do is actually tell them that we heard them. Our response when someone says something opposite to us, when a teenager especially says something opposite to us, is to say, no, you're wrong. Disregard what you just said because you're wrong, and let me tell you the truth. But this is a standard counseling technique. If you come to this seminar, this marriage seminar, I have a feeling they're probably going to bring this up. Standard counseling technique in communication. Someone says something to you, repeat it back to them in your own words. Then they feel heard and they feel validated. And I heard a yeah, thank you. Amen. We can get all charismatic up in here. It's good, I appreciate that. Yes, it does work. It works actually, this principle works beyond just dealing with adolescents. This works with anybody. You're having a fight with your spouse? Take a break. Humble yourself. And try to repeat back what they're saying to them in your own words. Understand what they're really trying to say. Understand their feeling behind it. Kathleen and I try this all the time. Well, I heard you say this! That's not listening, Andrew. Well, don't want to. I'm a big kid. But it actually is a working technique. A lot of, if you ever go to counseling or anything like that, they usually tell you, communication, you need to repeat back what you heard. And teens need to feel heard. They need to feel validated. As soon as they're shouting, that's my last point, that's an indication that someone was not felt heard. As soon as they're shouting, it's an indication that someone wasn't heard. So if your teen all of a sudden starts yelling, their voice starts going up, it's probably because they don't feel like you're validating what their opinion is. If your voice starts going up, it's probably because your teen is completely ignoring you and you don't feel like you're being validated or being listened to. And really, you're the older, smarter, more experienced one, so they should be listening to you. Tell a story. So my little tips for communication. Try to communicate with a story. That's our current generation. That's our current culture with teens. Try to tell a story. Try to help them understand where you're coming from. Facts, logic, reason, scientific method, whoop-de-doo. That sounds like school. I'm not going to listen to that. Tell me a story. That's going to communicate to me. And if you don't listen to my point of view, I'm going to start shouting at you. Maybe that means we need to listen to each other a little bit more. That's my best points. I figured they were fairly safe points to share because they're fairly general. And I hope that can be something helpful for you. In the family, it is so important that we teach our children the Bible. But they won't want to listen if we're just trying to lay out the facts. If we're just trying to exegete the best hermeneutical, theological principles out of our Bible. Those are big Bible school words. Just to try to reason with our kids. Well, you got to understand, the Trinity is like, it fits like this and this. I don't want to get into the Trinity. I don't know why I brought up the Trinity. I'm sorry. You try to reason out a theological principle to a teenager, and they're going to be like, this sounds like school. If you tell a story, I told a story at youth this last week about Jesus finding his first disciples in the Gospel of John. If you ever get a chance to read this, this is in John chapter 1, verse 35. It's hilarious. I actually don't have it. I'm just going to open it for you guys. I just want to quickly show you this because it's about the story. It's not about the theology of it. We did talk about the theology, but it's really about the story. Look at this. So I'm just going to paraphrase a bit of it. Jesus is walking by the river where John is baptizing people, dunking them in the water, possibly drowning. We're not really sure. Then John says, there's Jesus, and two disciples hear him say this, and they start following Jesus. This is the funny part. This is a story. This is where the story matters. Two disciples are following Jesus. They're like, okay, so Jesus is walking along. These two guys are like following him. Jesus turns around and goes, what do you want? They're like, where are you staying? That's creepy. And Jesus goes, oh, come on, I'll show you. Weirdo. So it's a story. The first story of Jesus' first disciples, they were stalkers. They were dudes stalking Jesus. He's like, well, they're going to follow me anyways. I might as well tell them where I'm sleeping tonight. I'm sure they won't kill me. It'll be all right. They don't have the internet yet. It's not like they can take pictures and track me on social media. It'll be fine. And then another funny part of that same story, and again, it's a story, right? Telling the story, Jesus meets Simon for the first time, and he looks at Simon, and he's like, you're Simon. I'm going to call you Peter. Okay. And Simon doesn't seem to have a problem with that. He's like, all right, I didn't really like the name Simon anyways. I'll go by Peter. Sounds good. Which means rock. I'm good. I'll be rock. It's a story. If I could break down the theological principles of this story, but if I just do that, a teenager's going to be like, oh, school is so boring. But it's a story. Tell the story. Okay, I think I've flogged that horse. Take a quick moment here to check for text messages before we move on to our next point. Am I tracking all right with everybody? I hope so. Someone, mystery, I never fight with my mom. Is that normal? That's normal, right? Totally normal. Glad you're not fighting with your mom. No, it's not really normal, but that's good. Hopefully that's a good sign. Hopefully that's because you're communicating well and not just ignoring each other, not communicating at all. Throw that out there for you. I don't know who texted that to me. Deal with it. I'm glad you're not fighting with your mom. That's great. This thing is really hard to... The next group that I think is responsible for raising teens, this is where we're going to move beyond just parents to those who maybe don't have their own teens or grown teens or they have kids that are not yet teens. It is an important role of the community to involve itself in the development and growth and education of our teens, especially when it comes to the Bible. So we're going to look at Titus chapter 2 really quick. This is my verse for this one. Verses 1 through 9. This is what it says. This is a letter that Paul wrote to Titus, who was probably a pastor. You must teach what is in accord with sound doctrine. Teach the older men to be temperate, worthy of respect, self-controlled, and sound in faith, in love, and in endurance. Likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine. But to teach what is good. They can train the younger women. Then they can train the younger women, to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure, to be busy at home, to be kind and to be subject to their husbands so that no one will malign the word of God. If any of that is a problem for you, just check back with the last three sermons that Chris did, because that he clarifies that a lot better. Similarly, encourage the young men to be self-controlled in everything. Set them an example by doing what is good. In your teaching, show integrity, seriousness, and soundness of speech that cannot be condemned, so that those who oppose you may be ashamed because they have nothing bad to say about us. And I'm actually going to stop there. Sorry, verse 9 is about slaves, and we don't have that in our culture anymore. You know what? Teach slaves to be subject to their masters and everything, to try to please them, not to talk back to them. That can be, if it matters to you, that can be a work employee-employer relationship. Very similar. So, you know, don't talk back to your boss. Nowadays, I'll just get you fired, so that should work. Slaves just get killed. I think we got the better deal now. Anyways, it's an important role of the community to be involved in this. It is not enough for just parents, but that men teach younger men, that women teach the younger women. Where are they to learn? Where is a young man to learn how to be an adult if he doesn't have a man to set him an example as a good man? How are we to learn if we are not taught by someone who's gone before us? If we just learn by doing and making mistakes, there's going to be a lot of people going astray. We need to have leadership in our lives. It's so important. And so my thought to that is mentorship. The role of the community is mentorship. Mentorship is essential to healthy growth. I have had multiple mentors. Often when I'm in my lowest places is when I seek a mentor, because then I need a mentor. I know it. I'm somewhere deep. I'm somewhere low. Many of you know, before coming here, I was a youth pastor in Kamloops about 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago now. I was a youth pastor in Kamloops, and the church didn't go well. My position there didn't go well, and they let me go 8 months into my position there, which I'm almost at 8 months here, so might break my record. Anyways, they let me go after 8 months, and I got a job at a game store, and I worked in just outside Vancouver for the last 2 years before coming here. In that time, I was in a very dark place, especially right after this all went down. I was pretty sure I was done with ministry. I was pretty sure that a church would never hire a guy that a church fired. Because if a church fired you, that puts a black mark on your resume. Somehow you guys looked past that. Huh. Hopefully that's okay. We'll see. We're almost at 8 months. Find out. I was pretty sure I was done with ministry, and I was really struggling with this because I went and got this master's degree, did a whole bunch of school. I put my family through financial burden, and I said, why, God, would you call me into ministry and then kick me out of it? And I went to a pretty dark place. I kind of stopped attending church, and I was just really, really frustrated with why would God call me to ministry and then kick me out of it? And it was in that time that I said, I can't keep doing this. And my wife came to me one day, I remember saying, she's like, figure your crap out. Because you're hurting all of us. Get your crap together. Yeah, we use the word crap. Sorry. Farmers, yeah, never mind. So, it's not a problem, I assume. So, get your stuff figured out, she said. So I called up one of my old profs and I said, I need someone to mentor me. I said, but it's not the standard mentorship. I need someone I can just drain. I'm just going to drain you of all your energy. I'm just going to take everything from you. I need someone to help me. I'm in a dark place. And he was incredibly kind and helped me out. And actually now every time that I prep for a sermon here and stuff like that, we keep in contact. And whenever I prep for a sermon, I call him up. I'm like, help, I'm doing a sermon. I don't like preaching. And he's like, all right, let's talk about the topic. I'm like, okay, awesome. Now it's a really healthy mentorship relationship. When it started, it wasn't overly healthy because I was just taking from him. And there's a little bit of give and take in mentorship usually. Never mind. Get past that. Go to that later. Point is, mentorship is essential for developing healthy growth. I would have stayed wallowing in my own self-pity and anger at God if I hadn't been forced by my wife, you know, the family part starts at home, and then sought a mentor and gotten help from Brian, who is just an awesome guy. And a good prof, too. Theology prof, solid. I often argued with him. He was usually right. So be a mentor, get a mentor. If you're in the community, you need both. You need to do both. Not only is it's not enough to simply get a mentor, you need to be a mentor. It's not simply enough to be a mentor, you'll need to be mentored. Trust me, if you start it, you got to do it. Being a mentor doesn't mean, though, that you're a counselor or a psychologist or that you're fixing someone's problems. A mentor is someone who comes alongside another person, usually someone younger or less experienced, and walks alongside them in life, encourages them, builds them up, hears what's going on in their lives, and reports back stories or gives back stories to help build them up, to give them advice through story, through experience, through what they've been in and how they've lived and what they've learned.